Hi, this is Dave the SEO, and this is top 8 mistakes that e-commerce teams without an SEO make. So some of my current and previous clients may think I'm basically basing this specifically on how I found their sites and their processes when I started working with them. But these are all issues I have seen on dozens of e-commerce sites. They make me want to cry a little still every time, knowing the effort that teams are putting in and the waste of SEO opportunity that a few small mistakes can make. I therefore am going to explain not just the issues, but also the solutions in a straightforward way. So let's start with deleting products or PDP pages. So this covers actually a few different situations. There's a few different solutions depending on the situation, but the basic rule is don't just delete or deactivate a product page, even if it seems like the obvious thing to do. But let's break this down to a few situations. So firstly, deleting, deactivating, or having a setting to remove out of stock products. Okay, so it doesn't look good to have category pages or PLPs full of products that aren't actually available. But expulsion is not the answer. If a URL stops delivering the page, then unless you redirect it, you have a 404 or a 410 error, and neither are good for search engines or for users. It's better for a user to see the product and see that this is not available, and then see what the related or alternative products are, because you remember to set those up, right? And also, why is it that more e-commerce sites don't have an option to get an email alert when products come back into stock? For search engines, if the page is still there, they will keep it in their index, which means when stock comes back in, it is visible straight away in search results. And most importantly, it hasn't lost any of the value it had. A page that's removed for too long will start to lose that value, or lose it completely, and eventually search engines will stop checking if it has come back again, especially if a 410 gone error code is used rather than a 404 not found error code. On your category pages, it's best to keep linking to out-of-stock products. Just have a setting to push them to the bottom, so in-stock products show first. If you are concerned about the page continuing to rank in search for keywords you'd rather another page ranked for, well, this isn't paid search, so it isn't so simple. Though using paid to get traffic to another product in the short term is one option. But if a product is out of stock long term, but you might want to re-optimize a different product for the same terms, or even de-optimize the out-of-stock product. But it won't, therefore, instantly switch back when the product is back in stock. So this isn't recommended for short-term stock issues. Then let's look at deleting, replaced, upgraded, or reformulated products, or products with new SKUs or GTINs. This one is simple, or at least it should be. If a product is being in some way replaced with a fairly straight swap, don't delete the old product. Don't even redirect it from the old to the new URL. If you can, use the same URL. Assuming the product performed well in search and converted well, keep as much the same as possible. Reuse parts of the product description if you can, even keep the reviews if you can, maybe with a note that it was for an earlier version. And if the name of the product has changed a bit, then put the old product name on the page somewhere prominent still, even in the H1, potentially. Something like Ultra Plus Soka Water Rifle, and then in brackets, replaces Ultra Soka Water Pistol with 20% further range. People will look for old product names for a surprising amount of time, even on things like fast-moving consumer goods. In the text version of this article, I have got some data from the UK from Google Trends showing the popularity of the term opal fruits over the last 10 years from 2015 to the beginning of 2025, and comparing that with Starburst, which is what Opal Fruits were rebranded as back in 1998. Now, there is much more interest for Starburst overall, but you can see there's a consistent interest still of maybe around 10%, as much as there is for Starburst, but it's still significant. And that's something that was rebranded back in 1998. So it does take a while for people to get used to new names. And if you think about FMCG stuff, you know, we think of, you know, fast moving consumer goods, but some of the things we think of fast moving consumer goods actually sit in people's cupboards for rather a long time. How often do you actually go out and buy a new container of baking powder, for example? And if your old container of a particular brand of baking powder has run out, then maybe you're looking for the same one again, with the same name. Anyway. The next situation is deleting discontinued products. So I think this is one that most people do know. So if a product is really, really discontinued and you aren't replacing it, then yes, it needs to be removed. And it probably does mean deactivating it in your CMS or product management system. But that doesn't mean just leaving the URLs of 404 or 410. You should redirect it, but also redirect to the right page. And that's maybe where people make the mistake. If you're removing a PDP or a product page, then it should ideally be redirected to another product page. And likewise, a PLP or a category page should be redirected to another PLP. That page that you redirect to should be the most relevant for users, and therefore it will be the most relevant for search engines. To oversimplify it a bit, Google passed more value from an old URL to whichever URL it's redirected to, the more similar it is. So completely different pages, no value passed. Similar page, for example, the same kind of product but from a slightly different brand, quite a lot of value gets passed. And then the next mistake is keeping discontinued products live. this seems a little bit like the opposite advice from above, but as I explained, discontinued products should be redirected. But sometimes you find they are just kept live on the site. And this is a problem in itself. This can mean that a product that will never be on sale ever again keeps all of its value from links, historic data, and so on, and continues to rank for important keywords. That's not great either. So a 301 redirect to a similar page is best there as well. What I have also run into a few times in the past, though, are products that have been discontinued, but they have to be kept live. So users can access things like support, downloads, warranty information. Okay, fine. In this case, if the product has been replaced with something similar, with a similar name, description, then use of a canonical tag to point from this old version to the new version is best practice. If it is completely discontinued, then leave enough information, you know, on the page that users who really need to find it can, especially, you know, if they're searching by model number or SKU or something. But you can de-optimize it and even reuse some of the high-performing sales copy on other similar products with tweaks as needed. So next up, mishandling product variants. So you've got a top. It comes in 5 sizes and it comes in 5 colors. So that's 25 variants. And you have 40 tops for your website in your spring range that need to be added to the site. And they each have a similar number of sizes and colours. So that's going to be about 1,000 variants. Please, please, please don't just add 1,000 separate pages or separate URLs for them. But at the same time, you may need a URL for your product feeds. And some of these will need a landing page with a variant selected. And there's a right and a wrong way to do this, both for users and for search engines. And luckily, the best way to do it is the same for both. So first thing to do is think about what people are actually going to search for in terms of what your variants are. And I'm using example of clothing here, but this could apply to all sorts of different things. Let's say with clothing as an example. So will they search for specific sizes of this top? Probably not. But you can check search term volumes if you've got the time for similar products. By all means, you may see that people are looking for type of product plus XXL or XS sizes, for example, things that are more difficult to find. And you're not going to assume that every product's going to have all the sizes. But people generally look for the product and type of product and expect to be able to choose a size if they're a more standard size. As for colour, however, maybe people will look for specific colours and even more likely for specific patterns. So for variants that people don't specifically search for, then just add them as an option and don't add them as separate products in the category pages. A parameter can be appended to the URL if needed, e.g. if the price is going to change when that option is selected. And it might be that you need a separate URL for any feeds or anything like that. But you don't necessarily need to have those parameters. For colours and patterns, however, or other variations or whatever your product may be, where people may search them specifically, then still add them as an option, not as a separate product, but ensure that when the option is chosen, that a parameter is added to the URL. And ideally, have the variant name appended to the title and to the H1 name of the product when somebody selects that. You can even on some platforms have a separate description of the variant show up if that's useful. This ensures that the content is going to be indexable. While Google and other search engines can see it is a version of the main page, they can also see what the variant is. And if someone does make a more specific search for that variant, then you can send them straight to a more specific yet parametered URL. And Google's very good at handling parameters and understanding that they are a way of showing different variants of a page. You'll see if you have a look at the version of this online that I've got an example from M&S, Marks and Spencer's, big UK retailer. And the way they have things set up in this example is they've got lots of different colours and lots of different sizes. If you select a size, it doesn't make any difference to the URL. But if you select a colour, it changes the pictures, but it also adds that parameter to the URL. So that's a good example of how that should work. What's also useful to boost these variants, though, is to add these important variants to a category page. You may decide not to if you don't want to clutter things, or you may decide to do this for just a few important variants, the ones you know people are going to search for most often. Or you could just add them to more specific categories. So, for example, you could have an our plus size range category, and that links directly to extra large or extra, extra large size variants, for example. Right, before I move on, I know some of you will be reading this and thinking, okay, but our e-commerce platform doesn't let us do half of those things, or we should have done that, but it is too late now. In which case, the next best option, if this parameter setup isn't possible, is going to probably be canonical tags. If you have similar product pages with similar or the same content that could compete for the same main terms, even if they might have some specific terms too, then choosing the main version and adding canonical tags to all versions pointing to the URL of the main version is going to be your best option. If you can't add canonical tags, see if there's any modules or add-ons for your platform that will allow you to add them. And if that isn't possible, it might be time to start planning a migration to a new platform or speaking to devs about upgrading the website. So next, using non-indexable widgets and functionality. So far, I've tried in this article not to get too technical because it's aimed at e-commerce teams who don't have an SEO. So I'm going to need to explain a little bit more on this one briefly. So content on web pages that is not indexable can't be added by search engines to their index, meaning it can't be matched to user searches and come up as a result. In some cases, whole pages aren't indexable. In other cases, parts of pages are not indexable. So when we talk about widgets and functionality, we're often talking about things that update the content on a page, or in some cases, it will apply to all pages of a certain type, such as PDPs or PLPs, and updates them in a dynamic way. This may not always be obvious to the user, but the result is that when the page first loads, the content may not be in one of the two versions of the page's code that search engines are going to check and add to their index. You may also hear people talking about web apps and single page applications, which are basically the same thing and can cause the same issues. So this can unfortunately include important information on product detail pages. For example, reviews of a product may not be indexable if they're loaded with a widget. Or if selecting a variant changes prices, description or other information, but the URL doesn't change, so for example, there's no parameter, then it probably is not going to be indexable. So that depends a little bit on how exactly it's coded. On PLPs as well, there can be issues. Often categories that are very long load up as a user scrolls. So as you scroll down the page, more products will show. And this can speed up the initial loading of the page. But most search engines, including Google, don't scroll in the way that users do. So they won't ever see those products. It does, again, depend on exactly how the page is coded as to whether they can see them or not. And one quick, though not foolproof, way to check if something is indexable, such as text or a link, is to copy it, the text or the link, reload the page, and don't scroll or interact with it. Just right-click and select the option Inspect. And on the code that will show, use Control and F keys to bring up the Find bar. And then search for that text. It works better with small amounts of text, or for the link. Remembering it may be a root relative link in the code, which won't have the domain in it. So it could be that you actually need to search for /about us, for example, instead of www.example.com/about us. So, mistake number 5, creating orphan pages. So orphan pages are those that have no links to them. But we also should be worried about those with few links to them, or any pages are a lot of clicks away from the home page and buried pages. But let's focus on orphan pages for now. So orphan pages can be pages that don't matter too much, and maybe they don't need to be found by users and search engines, in which case, don't worry too much. However, they can also be important pages that get cut off. And links have three main purposes for SEO. They spread link equity, which is important for ranking. They indicate topical relevance by having links between related products, for example, related content linking to each other. And they also allow search engines to find new pages for the first time. So if you're creating new pages and you forget to link to them, then unfortunately, it's a massive waste of time for the person who built or wrote those pages if they never get found. They may never get found, or it could be that they're included in a sitemap and they might be found through a sitemap, but they'll have little chance of ranking well if they've got no link equity flowing to them through links on the site. And in e-commerce, this is most likely to be products that are added and they never get assigned to any categories. Sometimes it just gets forgotten. And then you've got a situation where you've got old pages that may already be performing well in search results, maybe getting traffic and conversions. And they may become orphan pages by mistake and lose a lot of the performance they had as a result. For example, a category or PLP may be removed, leaving the products in it with no category. or a parent category may be removed, making an orphan page not only the child categories below it, but also in effect the products in those categories, as there's no way to navigate to them from the homepage or the rest of the site. Now, some platforms have reports in place to help you find these unfortunate pages. But the alternative, if you don't have that, is to run a crawl using SEO software such as Screaming Frog, which will show you which pages it can find and which it is finding, but only because of the XML sitemaps or other ways, such as through canonical tags that don't count as links, but are still a way to find those pages, but don't pass link equity. You can then hopefully get a list of all the URLs that should be that or that exist and compare and see the ones that haven't been found by the crawler. Another big mistake is not using Product Schema correctly. Product Schema is a wonderful gift from Google that lets us make our product pages stand out in search results. And just as a minimum, can A, make it clear to users it's a product, B, make the prices show within the SERPs, the search engine results pages, that is, C, have star ratings show up in the SERPs, and D, have the availability show in the SERPs, such as in stock. But too many sites just don't have this set up. It's 13 years since it was introduced by Google and supported by Bing at around the same time, for that matter. And other sites have it set up incorrectly. This may be that it's missing a unique identifier. It might be not having the different variants or offers set up correctly for a product. Might have missed the value for the currency or have the wrong currency or invalid currency. They might have a mixture of microdata and JSON-LD formats. Or just have the nesting of the schema and the properties all wrong so it doesn't work. Once Product Schema is correctly set up, though, it should automatically be added to every page in the correct format. So ensuring that the right settings are selected in your platform, ensuring that the platform is up to date, or adding in a schema or Product Schema specific add-on may solve any issues you're having. But on some custom or older websites, it might be something where you need to get developers involved with, but you need to make sure you give them very clear brief and clear acceptance criteria for how it should be set up and formatted. Otherwise, I've seen it before where developers do a lot of work and then you look at it and realize that they've made some common mistakes. Particularly with the formatting. Another mistake is not matching the product name to how people search in any way. And in some cases, just not really including what the product is. Now, I'm not going to say that the mistake is not doing keyword research, as this, to be fair, is extra work and you may simply not have time for that if you don't have an SEO in your team. I do recommend you do keyword research to really understand how people search for products. I'm not going to go into how to learn that here, but I will say that learning and getting the tools to do basic keyword research for a specific product is a lot easier than you might think. What is frustrating, though, is when pages have been created, when someone hasn't even briefly asked themselves how they, as a consumer, not as the expert that they are, as a consumer, how would they search for something and then have tried to reflect it in the product's name and ideally mentioning in the description as well. I've seen far too many product pages where without the picture, I wouldn't even know what it is, as the product name is something like Branco Elixium 1800, 24 centimeter wide UK plug. And the description, something along the lines of the Elixium 1800 is a major improvement on the Elixium 1600, faster, sturdier, and more environmentally friendly. And if it wasn't for having a picture of the image normally, then you still don't, you're not going to understand what it actually is. Sometimes even with the picture, it's difficult to work out. Now, if you're a blind web user, then, yeah, you've not got a chance of understanding that. And you kind of have to think of search engines in a way as being blind. They just see code. They generally are not going to do analysis using AI or anything like that into what a picture actually is. So they need to know what a product is to match it to results of what people are searching for. So if it's a semi-automatic tin opener, then say that. Keyword research may show you more people search for semi-automated can opener. But if you don't have time to do keyword research, at least including semi-automatic tin opener in the name is a start. And search engines know that the two things are the same. So you have a chance of showing somewhere. And at least some people will search that way in terms of what you actually put in. And what's more, give some context in the description by describing how good it is at opening tins and mention contextually relevant things like kitchen, soup and counter-mounted. All help search engines understand what your product is and users. Okay, and then mistake number 8, copying descriptions from manufacturers. Now, this one is, in theory, kind of pretty black and white. What you need to do here is simple but time-consuming to fix if it impacts a lot of pages. But if you're taking your SEO efforts seriously, you need to have original product descriptions. Google hates duplicate content, partly because the internet is littered with it. And once upon a time, sites would go and steal content from other sites and they managed to rank with it. And they rank higher than the sites they stole it from often. Google came down hard on this a long time ago, but that means that duplicate content is never ideal. And if it's taken from another site, it is a really big problem. You can maybe get away with your site having some content that is from other websites, if it's a small percentage, but it's still better to fix. Those duplicate pages themselves, though, are unlikely to ever get any organic traffic. And if a high percentage of your content is duplicated from other sites, then your whole site is probably being penalized. Even if the manufacturer gave you the content and asked you to use it, they probably gave it to dozens of competitors as well. So unless you were the first site to have that content and Google have deemed you the original, you need to rewrite it. Now, a rewrite may be mainly similar information, but in a different language, and that's difficult to avoid. But do try to add something extra. That means your content is going to be more useful and helpful than other content on the same topic explaining the same product, i.e. your competitor's content. So you could, for example, look at reviews and take extra insights from those to add to the description. So, for example, if a customer is saying that this shoe rack is slim enough to fit in their porch, then you could add a sentence or two about how this shoe rack has been designed with a slim profile to fit into almost any space, from porches to hallways. Okay, thank you for listening. If you've got any questions about this, do get in touch with me. I've tried not to go overly technical here, but where I have used some more technical terms, I've tried not to go into too much depth. Otherwise, it becomes more of a glossary than an article. So if there are issues here that you are facing, or you think you might be facing, or you just want to discuss and understand better what I've been talking about, then please get in contact with me. We can set up a call. You can get me on Dave at davetheseo.com. I will probably on the call ask you casually if you are looking for any SEO services, consultancy or support, of course. But I'm not gonna try and do a hard sell. And so we can spend the time on a call just answering some of your questions. Alternatively, at the time of recording, I have SEO training for non-specialists coming up, e-commerce edition of that training course in London on the 24th of March, 2025. And currently there are a few early bird tickets left on my website, davetheseo.com.